Everyone has a story. I get them to tell it. Welcome to the Aaron Bender Podcast, conversations with media personalities about their personal and professional lives and journeys. I want to thank you for helping make the first month of the Aaron Bender Podcast such a success. I'm not necessarily in it for the downloads, but I got to say, it means a lot that you're on this ride with me, so thank you. Invite you to share the podcast, subscribe if you haven't already, leave a rate and review on Apple Podcasts or whatever platform you're listening on. Again, thank you so much for all your support. Before we get to my long overdue conversation with Tyra Majors, a little about my story. I'm a widowed dad of two girls who just lost their mom, a grieving husband, a man in recovery trying to reconnect with the world with fresh eyes, faith, and perspective, a college journalism professor, a white guy in a world of injustice, a 20-year broadcast media veteran who had his dream job, then lost it. A year and a half ago, God gave me a gift, an opportunity to stop, step back, and breathe so I could learn about love, vulnerability, forgiveness, grace, self-care, patience, and understanding. My guest this episode is barely out of college, but already making major moves. Tyra Majors grew up in San Diego, went to school in Santa Barbara, Orange County, and quickly ran through grad school at USC. She just started a new job in Seattle as a reporter and morning traffic anchor at Como, but she also was just awarded a Golden Mic from the Radio Television News Association of Southern California for her work in Bakersfield.
Well, I've been an award-winning journalist for about 3 days now. And
have you come down off that high yet?
I have to say, it's been really exciting. Being such a young journalist and really just at the beginning of my career, it's been such a thrill. And just being recognized for something that you really poured your heart into and that you spent time putting together, it's a good feeling all around. So,
and especially for the story that you were awarded for as a young Black woman talking about race relations and police.
Absolutely. Something, you know, that was hard for America, for the world to see and witness. You know, 2020 was just such an insane year. And I think everyone was moved by some of the images and words that they saw and that they heard. And as a journalist, as a Black journalist, it definitely was not easy talking about and covering issues that affect my race directly. So that project was definitely really important for me to be a part of. My news director kind of just said, "We're doing this town hall. You are the anchor, you and your co-anchor, you two are in charge of this," and you put it all together. And so I rounded up some community leaders in Kern County that I thought would be a good fit. And the people who said yes were a part of it. And it turned out being something really great.
You talk about Kern County, you won that award for your work in Bakersfield, but you're talking to me now right now from Seattle. Tell me about that move.
Yeah, so I was in Bakersfield, as you know, for a year and a half. That was my first job out of college. So this is my second job, professional job, you know, aside from internships.
It's a huge jump. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. It has been a journey. I'm very proud of myself. I'm happy to be here in Seattle. It just doesn't feel real yet. Sometimes I feel like I'm just like on vacation or like in a dream. Not that the work isn't a lot or challenging, because it certainly is, but wow, sometimes I have to pinch myself. Like, I did make this jump so quickly after graduating college, and I know, you know, it's not the case for many journalists, but I am happy to be here. And I didn't expect to leave Bakersfield so soon after starting. But it was just one of those opportunities where, okay, this is what's being offered to you. This is what's ahead of you. Go for it. Take a risk. Why not? What's the worst that can happen? And that's what I did.
Was it a move within the company, or was Bakersfield cool with it? How did that all go down? How was that conversation?
Yes, the same company, Sinclair Broadcast Group. And it was just like an upward mobility process. So I didn't have to break contract or anything, or you know, cut ties with any of the people in Bakersfield. Ugh, I love them all. It was just, no experience is like your first market experience. And I've heard, you know, more veteran journalists say that, and that's so true. It felt kind of like an extension of college there. I developed such close relationships with my colleagues and my supervisors, and I feel fortunate enough to not have broken any barriers by like moving to another station. So we're all still close and tight knit. So that process was easy in itself. I've taken on a completely different role here in Seattle. I am a morning traffic anchor, and I still get to do some reporting. So it's the same in the sense that I'm still on a morning broadcast, which is awesome. I love morning.
Didn't have to change your schedule, right?
I didn't have to change my schedule. The schedule hasn't gotten any easier. It's still tough waking up at 1:45 in the morning. I don't know how we do it, but we do it. The news, you know, it's different here in Seattle. It's a bigger city, bigger population. There's more area that we cover. But I feel like Bakersfield just prepped me for this, just because Bakersfield was such a great news town as well. And I can go more in depth to that as well.
Yeah, I want to find out about that. I think a lot of people listening to this in Southern California, especially, maybe they know Bakersfield. They don't think, oh yeah, Bakersfield, totally a great a news market. No, maybe not necessarily the reputation of having, you know, of being a great news market, at least outside of the news community.
Yeah, you're exactly right about that. Usually when people think about Bakersfield, you know, they think about oil and agriculture. That's what they're really known for. And it's kind of just like that pit stop you make when you're on a road trip from SoCal to NorCal. You stop in Bakersfield because it's convenient. There are several gas stations and motels and hotels right off the freeway, but it is just so much more than that. It's a small community with a big news town feel. And there's a lot that happens in Bakersfield. And as a morning news reporter, I really got to see all of it. I mean, breaking news almost every morning. If, you know, there were stabbings, there were shootings, there were fires, there were earthquakes. Obviously the big one last year or 2019 was Ridgecrest, which, you know, that was a national news story. But, you know, and Bakersfield, with that being said, has a reputation of being a city with a lot of crime, but all cities have crime. Bakersfield, you just saw a lot more of it. But when there wasn't breaking news and, you know, something bad happening, there was just a lot of good in the community. The most kind people I met are in Bakersfield, and the best food too. I mean, you really get that small town feeling, and people are just so welcoming. The viewers really appreciate local news there, and you felt respected. You know, the media, it's something you hear a lot, and it's something that has like negative connotation nowadays, but in Bakersfield, you feel respected, you feel love. You know, of course, there's, you get a couple bad apples every now and then, and they're just like, oh, wow, fake news, that's everywhere. But for the most part, Bakersfield was just such a great experience. And for young journalists who are thinking about, you know, first markets, where should I go after school? That is a great training ground, because there's not all just new journalists. You know, there's some veteran journalists there in Bakersfield that have jumped to several markets, and now they're back home in Bakersfield, and that's where they are to stay. The other thing about Bakersfield is that since it's so close to LA, we caught a lot of those big stories in LA. So whenever there was something happening in LA, like the wildfires, or I mentioned the Ridgecrest earthquakes back in 2019, I was there front and center next to the reporters from KTLA and ABC7 and even some network news correspondents. So I was just like, wow, Bakersfield is cool. This was the right move.
You brought up that it was your first job out of college, went to Cal State Fullerton. What made you choose Fullerton? I mean, I know you, San Diego? You grew up in San Diego? So it was just up the freeway, yes, but why Fullerton and why not Northridge, where I went and where I teach?
Well, there's great things about CSUN, and a lot of my journalism friends have come from CSUN, and they're so talented. So I know that would have been a good option as well. I know all your students are in great hands. Cal State Fullerton, yeah, born and raised in San Diego. I'm a SoCal girl through and through. I actually started in community college. I went to community college in Santa Barbara, and I didn't have the best grades in high school. I had average grades, not horrible, but wasn't good enough to get me into a four-year right out of college. I didn't get into any four-year universities out of college, which was fine. I went to junior college, and that was one of the best decisions ever. So I went to Santa Barbara City College because it was away from home. But that city college is the only community college in California that offers dorms. So the community college students were able to stay in dorms near UCSB. And so we got to have that college experience that most freshmen get when they go away from home for school. And so I finished there in 2 years. That was where I actually took my very first journalism course and had my very first internship at a local cable station. I fell in love with the craft during my time in Santa Barbara. So in my research for journalism schools, I wanted to be in LA or near LA, close to home as well. Cal State Fullerton was just always on my radar. I heard great things about the professors. I read great things about the alum that had come out of CSUF. And also, I had a family member that went to Cal State Fullerton and said great things about it as well. And so I just decided to go there.
You had to stay a Titan. You had to keep the Titans in the family.
Yes, kept the Titans in the family.
Did you go to Santa Barbara City College or go to college just in general with the idea that you wanted to be a reporter?
So no, I did not know I wanted to be a reporter until I got to college. I've always liked to write and tell stories. I actually grew up modeling and acting as a young kid, my siblings and I. My mother put us in that at a very early age, which was awesome. So I was always telling stories in some shape or form, whether that was on stage acting or writing short narratives, you know, in my spare time, or taking pictures in front of the camera as a young model. I did not want to go into college studying acting or film at all. I just wanted something new. I actually applied to colleges with the major of psychology declared. And I didn't take a single psychology course.
Of course not.
I kind of just picked something just to like fill the bubble on the application. And when I got to college, I took general education courses. And that's when I said, okay, journalism, this is cool. This is like all the things I've ever loved kind of just lumped into one.
So what was it like when you took that first journalism class? Was it just, okay, this is journalism 101, let's teach you the basics? When did you feel like you caught that bug in that class, or did it take some time to really kind of sink in like, okay, journalism is the thing, and then maybe you branched out into, okay, broadcast journalism is the thing. How did that timeline work for you?
Right. So that first course, it was just like a basic journalism class, journalism 101. And it taught the basics of, you know, writing a news lead, that kind of thing, finding your sources. And we'd get assigned stories and have to turn articles for the school newspaper. And I think it was just that curiosity bug. I was just always curious and I just wanted more and more and more. I had no problem going up to people and asking them how they felt about certain things or, you know, certain things that were going on around campus or around Santa Barbara. And same thing with Fullerton, that curiosity bug just always stuck with me. And I think like it sounds cliche, but that really is one of the most important qualities of someone who's going to work in this business.
When I talked with now Bakersfield reporter Ileana Capellan, which station did you work at Bakersfield, by the way?
So I was at KBAK, KBFX.
It's okay.
CBS and Fox affiliate.
So she just started over at KGET 17. And she grew up in Orange County, Dominicana, Mexicana, and looked around and there just weren't that many people who looked like her. And, you know, just she ended up thriving out of her comfort zone. As a young Black woman in Orange County going to Cal State Fullerton, did you have a similar experience?
I'm very used to being the only one who looks like me. And whether that's in my courses, in a grocery store, I think that's just, it just comes with living in Southern California. You know, there are people of color, but you gotta look for them. And in a small town like Fullerton, or even like, Bakersfield, everybody knows everybody. And so that's what it was like for me in school at Cal State Fullerton, at least in the journalism program. I did branch out. I joined the Black Student Union. I even took a board position, and that was really awesome. It was a great way for me to connect with other Black students and share ideas and just like feel at home away from home as well. But yeah, that's been a feeling that I've had, you know, and even in elementary school in San Diego, I'm the only Black girl in my class, and you know, that's fine. I think in ways that's also helped me grow, not only as a person, but as a journalist, I'm able to vibe with everybody, strike up with a conversation with everybody. I think that's the beauty of being in diverse places and not so diverse places. So yeah, I can definitely relate to her experience in Bakersfield as well. I can count the Black reporters on my fingers there, at least from the time when I was there. And we all knew each other. We kept a close bond, which is always great. You got to support each other.
I would imagine also your experience as a model and an actress growing up helped with that, because if you have those feelings of discomfort or whatnot, you can just kind of put on that mask or put on that face like, okay, I got to do a job here.
Absolutely. That's a really good correlation. Uh-huh. And it also helps you recognize just like how important representation is as well. You know, if you see that you are the only one of your race, or if you feel like you need to put a mask on or work 10 times harder, then it's just like, okay, you can be, I guess, an advocate for representation. Now it's my job. Now it's my job to help recruit that next generation of journalists or actors or models, you know, who look like me, so that there can be more of us, so that other people won't have to feel that way in the future.
Do you feel some pressure on that, or is it more pride?
I mean, it always feels good if you want to help out, if you can help out. I recently was fortunate enough to help critique the scholarship recipients for the National Association of Black Journalists. And so it's like, okay, I'm helping out the next generation. And yeah, there's some pride in that. But also it's just like, it's a great feeling knowing that you are doing your part and knowing that change is coming as well.
So I want to find out, because you really hit on, while you were at Santa Barbara City College, the emphasis on storytelling. One of the stories that you've told, Grammy and Me, it's a children's book that if I go to Amazon right now, which I've been trying to do for the last several weeks, I cannot get because it is sold out.
What? Well, for the past several weeks, I got to call Amazon and talk to them about that. Yes, with COVID-19 and, you know, the pandemic, it has been a struggle with Amazon. And I'm sure lots of people have experienced this.
Tell me about Grammy and Me.
Yeah, Grammy and Me. And I'm going to make sure you get a copy, Erin. Grammy and Me is the story of a young girl spending the day with her grandmother. I wrote it based on my experiences with my grandmother. She passed away in 2014 when I was actually going to school in Santa Barbara. And I wrote it during my time there in college. And I've always wanted to publish a book. I mentioned to you, I've always, you know, written short stories, whether they were fiction or actual narratives of random things that happened in my day. And this was just one of those days in Santa Barbara when I was in math class and I probably was not paying attention. I should have. I was doodling in my journal and I was like, let me just write. And I was thinking about my great grandma. I called her Grammy. And what I wrote on those pages just sounded like a children's book. And when I was home in San Diego one weekend, I read it to my parents and they were like, you should publish this. You should look into publishing it. And so I did the research, got it all worked out and published it within 2 years. And so definitely one of my proudest accomplishments. It's been such a great journey. Not just being able to call myself an author and an illustrator, but being able to once again give back to young children. I loved reading as a kid. I still do love to read. And just knowing that I am providing literature and about, you know, family, quality time, something that's just so important at this time and always.
You brought up how supportive your parents were when you brought them that story. And they're like, hey, you should totally publish it. Let's work this out. Let's figure this out. as the father of two daughters, I'd like to take some notes here as to be, you know, supportive of my daughters and their dreams. Talk about how key it was for your parents to be supportive of yours.
Well, that's a great question, and thank you for asking. Yes, my parents, I owe them everything. They have been the most supportive parents and friends. I think it's awesome to parent, and I think my parents do a great job at balancing being a parent, but also being my friend. I am best friends with my parents. I feel just comfortable enough to come and talk to them about everything. And I usually take their advice about everything, except when it comes to like men, boys. But I think, yeah, that's probably an area I could listen in a little bit better.
Wait a minute. Now here's the thing. We're going to stop right there, and I want you to continue, but you seek advice from them about men, but don't take it, or you just don't even bother seeking it anymore.
I seek it. I mainly vent to them, and then they'll give me advice that's unsolicited, and I just like don't listen to it. It goes out one ear, not the other.
Oh my God, that's great.
It's awesome. Yeah. And like I said, it's our relationship. And that's why I feel comfortable, you know, going to them about certain things like that. And really with everything. They're great listeners. They have also lived a lot of the experiences that I have, lived as well. So, I mean, you ask for advice with your own daughters. I'd say it just, and I'm no parent, but what I really appreciate about my parents is how well they listen. And my dad especially, he's just not judgmental at all. He can definitely be strict. He'll tell me when I'm, you know, not really thinking straight or if I could be doing something better, but it's in a very non-judgmental way, and I think that goes a lot.
So one sister, two brothers, where are you in that hierarchy there?
I am the middle child, second oldest. So an older brother is 27, then there's me, I'm 24, my little brother is 22, and then Victoria, my sister, is 18.
Middle child, but first daughter.
First daughter, yes.
Okay, so I don't know that the middle child really applies, the middle child syndrome or anything like that, because with four, and the way you guys have it, it's your brother, older brother, her's firstborn, okay? You, middle child, yes, but your first daughter.
Yes.
Then your younger brother, okay, but he's the baby brother.
Yes.
And then Victoria is
overall baby.
The overall baby. So I want to know how things were going growing up, the four of you in that house, and how did Dad survive? That's what I'm wondering.
I don't know. Honestly, I have no idea how my parents did it, and I ask them that all the time. Like, we're so close in age too. I have no idea how they managed, you know, four small children running around and screaming all the time. But from what they say is that we were really good kids. And I think we were. I'm laughing.
You couldn't get that out with a straight face. I like that.
I was okay. So my siblings and I, you know, we've always gotten along. Of course, there's sibling bickery that here and there, you know, that happens in every household, I think. A little bit of rivalry here and there, but for the most part, we're all like best friends. And as we get older, we only get closer. Of course, there's Victoria. She's the baby. And, you know, there's the stereotype, the babies get everything they want. And that's facts. That is completely true for Victoria. She is a pescatarian. No one else in my family is, but because Victoria is pescatarian, my parents are going to cook pescatarian and shop for a pescatarian. It's just, you know, things like that. That's the most recent thing. But she's awesome. We all love her. I've never really felt middle child syndrome. If anything, my siblings make fun of me for being the quote unquote favorite kid. And I don't think I'm the favorite. I think we're all loved equally, but they say I'm the favorite.
Of course, the favorite would say that, right?
Of course, the favorite would say that. I don't think I'm the favorite, but if they think that, you know, that's how they feel. But like I said, we have a really good relationship, and it's always been that way for the longest time, because Victoria and I are 6 years apart. I was just the only girl. It was just me and my two brothers. And so I would be, you know, running around outside with them, playing Mario Kart, you know, doing more, I guess, masculine activities, or boyish activities. You know, we can all do anything we want, but I grew up with boys. And when Victoria came along, I was so happy I had someone to play Barbies with.
I was going to ask, because you're 6 years old, give or take, when she comes along, how'd you feel about that?
So this is a story my mom tells us all the time. When Victoria was first born, and it was like the third night maybe she had been with us, and she was crying all night, and I guess I ran out of my room, and I was 6 years old at the time, and I said, can you go back to the hospital and have them put her back in your stomach? And I just like don't remember that at all, but my mom loves to tell that story. And so I guess I was annoyed. I mean, who wouldn't be, you know, listening to a small child cry all the time? But Victoria and I have such a good bond now. And even growing up, like I said, we played together, we share clothes, and it's fun having a little sister. And I hope she likes having a big sister as well. I think she does.
It sounds like, yes, sibling rivalry, but lifting each other up and supporting each other. You can be better at that. Let's help each other.
Yes, we all support each other. And I think that's important with your family members. Like, once again, like my parents support me. You got to support your siblings as well. And good example with my brothers, even yesterday, we all have a family group chat. And my brothers, they actually are in the music industry. They write music and they like to record music. My older brother sends a song to the group chat. And my little brother responds and he goes, you know, I think you could have wrote this a little differently. I've heard better stuff from you. And so it's like, you know, constructive criticism. And even my sister, she'll critique my makeup. She sees me on the news and she's like, Tyra, like, what is going on? Like, you need to fix that, because she is the makeup guru, literally. So we help each other out, and it's a fun relationship.
I don't want to get too far away from something you mentioned when talking about your parents, how they've had a lot of the experiences that you've had, or at least that you are experiencing. What were some of those?
Well, both my parents, they both grew up in San Diego. Actually, you know, I'm not sure that the diversity thing was as recognizable for them as well, because I think they went to more inner city schools. So they probably, you know, grew up around more people who looked like them. But my parents have always been go-getters. They've always been ambitious. And I think I resonate with a lot of those qualities. Probably one of the biggest differences, though, my parents, they had my siblings and I when they were really young, far much younger than I am. My mom had me when she was 19 years old, and my dad was 21. And so once again, I look at them and I ask them all the time, how did you do it? I don't know how I could do it now. If I had to, I would. Obviously, I would, because I've gotten a lot of those qualities from them, just really being, you know, caring, being. What's the word I'm looking for?
Well, by the age you are now, your mom had three kids.
Yes. Yeah. Ooh, I don't know. Maybe we are different.
Your face.
I'm thinking just, of myself, you are totally right about that.
You've had a smile on your face for pretty much this entire conversation until I put that into perspective.
I know.
That's no okay. Hard. You've had two jobs by then instead of three kids.
So yes, I've taken on some responsibility, you know, a lot of responsibility, different types of responsibility.
Yeah.
But I think there are still some of those qualities that, you know, we can relate to.
You had already been working in Bakersfield prior to the pandemic, and here we are coming out of the pandemic. So you've got now a year of experience. What was that experience like for you? Did you keep going into the studio? Did you do a lot of work from home? How was your mental health also? It's all kind of encompassing, and we can kind of hit some exits as we go along.
Yes. COVID-19 reporting still ongoing. Yeah. But didn't mean for it to rhyme. It's been stressful. I actually had a balance of working in the station and also working in studio, at least when I was in Bakersfield. Here in Seattle, I've been going into the studio only, because now I'm, you know, anchoring. So I have to be in studio. In Bakersfield, I was the morning news reporter. So we were doing a lot of field work. And a lot of my live shots I had to interact with other people. I was doing live interviews all the time. So they pulled the cord on that right away and said, okay, you will do virtual interviews now, pre-recorded interviews or live interviews from the studio. And so that was a big part of my day-to-day during the pandemic in Bakersfield. We had a couple of COVID outbreaks at our station. And so, I mean, not necessarily outbreaks, but COVID scares. And then a lot of us transitioned to working from home, which was a cool experience as well. Definitely, I thought it was fun at times, but then sometimes I was like, okay, I miss the outside world. Like most of us, you know, there's nothing can come close to just being out in the field and being there and really experiencing the action. I'd only go out if there was extreme breaking news that had to be covered in person. But for the most part, I was working from home. And we've all just had to pivot. All journalists, all people in all industries had to pivot. And it's cool to know that, okay, I was a part of that, you know, pivoting and that transition. And I learned so much along the way about what I can do and even the types of stories I can tell and how I told them. I didn't necessarily have to be with someone in person or have to shoot the video myself. I can have the interview subject shoot video for me. I remember interviewing a young boy and his mother who got COVID-19 kind of towards the beginning of the pandemic. This was probably May of last year. And I remember telling him, I can't come to you. I cannot record you. I'm literally gonna just steal some pictures off your Facebook account and Instagram account. If you can film yourself doing things, I don't know, around the house, whatever you can give to me, send it to me. And so that's kind of what I've been doing, Source VO, I think they call it. And that's just been such a clutch thing to have. But I think we're all just kind of ready for this pandemic to end. Here in Seattle, it's been a little bit different since I'm covering news differently, you know, as a traffic anchor, but also with reporting. I mean, the biggest news story is still COVID-19. And it's been interesting kind of comparing and contrasting pandemic in California and here in Washington. More similarities than differences, but as far as the reporting, it's pretty similar.
When you tell people in California, hey, I'm going to Seattle, one of the first things they say is,
it rains so much. Are you sure? It's so gloomy there. It's gray.
You ready for it?
I'm ready for it. I think it's been fine. Here in Seattle, the rain isn't as bad as everyone, you know, said it was. It's mainly like a mist, and I can handle that. And I was nervous going in. I'm like, I'm so used to sunny skies and sunshine. And I got my first real rain jacket and rain boots before moving here. And I've hardly had to wear the rain boots because it's really not that wet. We had 2 days of snow here. That was an experience. Thankfully, it happened on a weekend, and I didn't have to go into work, so I was just comfortable in my apartment watching the snow from the window.
That's probably your first snow, then, at any place that you've lived. I mean, yeah. Santa Barbara, Fullerton, San Diego, Bakersfield.
I've seen snow, but have never lived in it. And, you know, I still technically am not really living in a place that snows because apparently the crazy winter snowstorm only happens in Seattle 2 to 3 days a year. So it's already gone and I'll see it again.
It's come and gone, right.
It's come and gone, exactly.
How about mental health? We go back to that. A lot of people talk about that with Seattle, those gray skies. I think it's seasonal affective disorder that really kind of hits people in their winters, but in Seattle, much more so because you have many more gray days.
Mm-hmm. I have heard about that, yes. Yeah. For me, mental health, I really realized how important it was during the pandemic last year in my time in Bakersfield, and I'm still carrying the same tips and practices that I, you know, kind of instilled in myself in Bakersfield. I've carried them on here to Seattle. So self-care, so cliche, but it's just such a good cliche. Really just taking time for yourself and doing the things you love. And for me, that's unplugging. I love, love, love social media and connecting with my friends online. But that is something that I disconnect from after work, I try to, at least as best as I can, to not check work emails. I don't take any work phone calls after the time I leave the office. That's a hard thing to do, especially for people working in news, and a lot of reporters that are probably going to listen to this are like, how does she not do that? But it's all about mental health. I mean, with, especially with such, you know, death and destruction that we've talked about and that what's gone on throughout this year, it's important to disconnect from that. And so I just spend time doing things I like, my hobbies. It goes back to writing, you know, whether that's journaling or writing the next book. I love to draw as well. I like to watch Netflix shows. It could be as simple as just eating snacks and sitting on my couch, which is what I was doing before this interview. And it's just, it's the beauty of self-care, and it just resets your mind. It helps you the next day. It helps me the next day. You know, I feel reset and ready to go.
What are you watching on Netflix? What's your three recommendations, either on Netflix or Hulu or whatever you're streaming? What are you recommending?
Okay. I'll just talk about the shows that I recently finished because I watched everything. Shinny in Georgia was really good on Netflix.
On Netflix, okay.
Firefly Lane on Netflix, also really good. And these are definitely like female-driven womanhood coming-of-age shows, but I think anyone will enjoy them. Ginny in Georgia, Firefly Lane. Let's see, the third one. This isn't, this is actually an ongoing show. This newest season of American Idol is so good. I've been watching it on Hulu every week. And I hadn't watched American Idol since I was, I don't know, maybe in high school. But I just decided, why not? Let's watch American Idol. These kids, and they're mainly kids, they're ages 16. They're 16 to 18, maybe. They are just so talented. And like, I am driven to tears after the performances. And we're still in the audition period right now. But I don't know, I get all emotional and I'm like so sensitive. And I just like love watching American Idol. It makes me so happy seeing these kids get a golden ticket and they're like, we're going to Hollywood. And it's just a happy feeling. Watch things that make you happy.
Where would your golden ticket take you?
Ooh, that's such a great question. In life, long-term or short-term?
It is up to Tyra to interpret however she'd like.
Where would my golden ticket take me? I'm just going to be really vague and I'll say my golden ticket will take me to happiness, shall take me to happiness. I just think like that was probably so vague. You're probably like, what a boy. No, but I just think there's nothing more important than being happy in your family and the people you love. You can have, you know, the career of your dreams. You can have all the money in the world. You can have all the friends in the world. But if you're not happy, then like, what are you doing it for? And so if I'm not happy with something, I make that change real quick. And I think it's easier said than done. But, you know, if you're unhappy in a job, make a change. Make it so that you are happy. If you're unhappy in a relationship, cut that relationship out or figure out ways to improve it. And I don't know. I think it's like just a mantra I try to live by. Being happy. Yeah, that's where my golden ticket would take me.
Do you have a five-year plan at this point? Or are you kind of seeing where Seattle takes you over the next couple of years?
Yes, I'm really going with the flow right now. One of the reasons I decided to come to Seattle, or one of the reasons that, you know, really got me excited about Seattle was that, okay, this is a new adventure. I'm so young. If it's the wrong decision, it's not the wrong decision really, because hey, I'm 24. I can change my mind and try something else again. I'm not falling behind in any way. I'm only gaining from this experience. And so I only want to gain more from here. Seattle's been great so far. I expect to be here for the next 3 years or so. And so I only want to improve, just learn as much as I can. As far as like next market or next moves, I'm really going with the flow at this point. I love my home. I love Southern California, but I'm also really curious about the East Coast. I've only visited the East Coast. I have family over there, but I've never lived over there. I don't know if I can handle the cold in the East Coast, but like I said, I'm curious about it and I'm just keeping an open mind. So 5-year plan, we will see. I definitely will be in news. I love news. I can't see myself giving that up in any way.
Someplace on the East Coast calls you and says, pop on out here. We've got the best job for you, dream job. You snap your fingers. Where on the East Coast would you go?
Wow, that's a good question. So I've been to a lot of cities on the East Coast. I love history. So, I think DC is really cool. I think New York City is really cool. I mean, who doesn't love New York? I've only visited there once again, never lived, but it just seems like a really fun place to be. But like I said, I'm keeping a really open mind right now.
I think we're too far from it for me to throw in a pun about major moves.
Yeah, so Major Moves is a digital talk show that I created during my time at USC for grad school. I don't even know if we talked about that.
No, we didn't, girl.
I was at USC for grad school for 11 months, such a little short time in my life. But I started USC, or I started USC. I did not start USC. Can you imagine? I started Major Moves while I was at USC, studying journalism there. And I always wanted to start a talk show. And basically, what that is I interview millennial entrepreneurs, people like, myself and you who are just starting their own brand and making a name for themselves and talking to people about their lives. So I've interviewed everyone from, young women who've created their own wine brand to young film directors to makeup creators, clothing designers, just really anyone and everyone that started a brand is a working entrepreneur and making a name for themselves. And I think it's a way. Or, my goal is it for it to be a way for the next generation of aspiring entrepreneurs to have something to look at and say, okay, I can do this too. And if not, think about different ways that they can explore different paths and different journeys they can take to get to where they want to be.
I appreciate it, Tyra. Thank you so much.
I'm so happy the podcast is back, Aaron. Like, I
Thank you.
really listen to it all the time when I would drive those long drives from Bakersfield to San Diego
Yep.
or, LA to San Diego, I always listen to your podcast. And, that was even more motivation for me to keep going in this industry. So thank you. This was so cool.
You can connect with Tyra at tyramajors.com or on social media at Tyra Majors. I'll put all her info in the show notes. You can find me at aaronbender.com. Please subscribe to the podcast, rate, review, share. If you have guest ideas or comments, welcome to email me, aaronbendermedia@gmail.com. Be well, and thank you so much for listening.